Hello and welcome to the Cheerleading Junkie. I'm your host, Jill Markley. For so many cheerleaders and coaches, one of the best events of the season is summer camp. So today we're talking to RV Tenney, owner of Solid Ground Stunts Camp, about how to have a successful camp experience. Welcome, RV.
Hi, Jill. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. I believe you've been cheering since you were in high school. Do I have that correct?
Yes, I did 2 years at Gardner High School, my junior and senior year. Let's see. It was a funny story how I started. I actually lost a bet. I was trying to get onto the field at halftime to kind of make a fool out of myself. I wasn't involved in cheerleading at all. And then I guess I was so good at it, they wrote me into being the mascot. And then part of the deal I made with the cheerleading coach to get on the field was that I would try out for basketball cheerleading. And so I got my promise and I showed up and loved it. And a couple other guys came out. And so we had three guys on our first year and four guys our senior year.
Wow.
And we won state's senior year in 2000.
So cool.
Yeah, it was fun. Fun times. And then I never turned back. Kept cheerleading my whole life.
Yep. I hear that. So did your high school team go to camp too? Is that like where you first started experiencing it?
They did go to camp, but I didn't. I was like, cheerleading camp? I have a job. I'm going to go make money. Like, why do I spend money to cheerlead? So the only chance I had to go to cheerleading camp was with my college team after high school. So my high school team did go to Fitchburg State. They went to a four-day traditional camp, cheer camp, that summer before my senior year. I did not attend. I wish I did, looking back on like how much fun camp is. But I was like, you know.
Yeah.
17-year-old kid working, trying to make some real money. And
no, I got it.
To go cheerlead didn't make sense to me. So I was too new to it. But yeah, so then my freshman year, I went to Westfield State College, and we went to college camp at Rutgers, and that was like the mecca of Northeast college camps. There were, you know, between 30 and 40 teams, Division I, like we were seeing some really intense cheerleading competition down there at college camp, and that's where I actually got requested to try out for UCA. So at college camp, my freshman year of college is when I started my instructional journey. Into summer camps.
Wow, that's really interesting. Yeah, so, okay, that's a lot in that to unpack. So I know now, like, you have to go to camp in college in order to get a bid. Was that why you guys were going, or were you going for skill development? Or?
Yeah, at that time, it wasn't for a bid.
Oh, neat.
Back in the early 2000s, that wasn't a thing yet. We, you know, we wanted to go to see what was out there and to push ourselves and to see if we stacked up against some of the best teams that were out there, and really just to have that experience. Like I said, it was my first camp experience. It was college camp, which is a little different than high school camp, a little more free in terms of it's all adults and, you know, the nightly activities are a little bit more fun. but it was a great experience. And then that kind of sucked me into trying out for UCA staff that next winter season and then working the following summer. Wow. So I started UCA staff in 2002. So
wow. And yeah. How long are you still UCA staff now, or you were doing it at least for a long time, right?
Right. So technically I still work for UCA staff. I still go to their training weeks to stay up with the new stunts and rules and everything else. And I'm a contract. So we contract with UCA for the staff, staffing of our camp. Mm-hmm. So in order for me to head our camps, I need to keep on going and staying current with, obviously, with all the rules, safety regulations, all of my credentialing through staff. So it's the easiest way to do it is to stay working for UCA. It also allows me to work competitions through the year, to judge tryouts, to do other things for the company that aren't involved in camp.
Wow. Yeah.
This would be, let's see, I took 2 years off, one being COVID related. So this would be my 18th year for UCA.
Wow, that's amazing, actually. We've interviewed a few guys who were UCA staff, but I think that's the longest. We had a 10-year, I think a 14-year. So it seems like some people, they get into it and they just love it, you know, and don't stop.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to make the transition from, you know, doing all of the physical stuff to running camps.
Yeah.
The shelf life, the average is like 4 years. It's almost like the NFL. The average life is like 4 years, your college years. And then if you make it past that, it's probably because you're running camps.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Not necessarily in the trenches anymore. running around flipping and stunting at the high level that the kids are doing.
Oh, yeah, I bet. But, so as a staffer or even as someone who attended camp on your own, is there something you look forward to at camp or that you always looked forward to at camp?
My favorite part of camp is the energy. Just having that many teams that really don't know each other but are all there for the same purpose, mm-hmm. coming together and then building that energy and sharing the energy. And you just don't quite get that if you're doing a private camp or if you're doing like a choreography camp. It's a very different dynamic, and I think it's just a lot of fun. I think camp is just, it's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be a time where you're just focused on your team and team building and having embracing the moment. And I think you can get a lot of growth, especially out of new cheerleaders at a camp like that. You know, your veteran cheerleaders are going to get it, and they're going to, you know, rise to the challenge when it steps up. But sometimes new kids just don't get what it means to like lead and be in the middle of it and kind of frenzy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're fresh. Me, I love boogie chants.
So you love boogie chants. That's true. Yeah, and the kids love your boogie chants. My cheerleaders do them. Like if we host a kids clinic or something like that, they always break into boogie chants like 3 times a day.
it's something from even when I started as a rookie. I was like, what is this magical thing called a boogie chant, and how do I become the best at it? And because it's such a, it changes the mood in a room. Like everyone buys in and starts going crazy, and the energy just builds. And especially if you're like day three, everyone's exhausted, sore muscles, and they're just crashing and burning. Boogie chant, re-energize, take your mind off of how much how sore your arms are, and get silly and have some fun, and then it resets your brain, kind of getting back into it.
Yeah, it does. They're so much fun. I know the kids love those. Okay, so tell me how Solid Ground Stunts came about as a result of all of this camp experience.
Let's see. So when I met Brooke, I was still working full-time at UCA. I was doing about 22 to 25 camps a summer, just going, like living out of my car, just driving. I would fly down to do some southern camps before, like in early May, because their school schedule is different than ours. So I'd hit Southern Miss and Alabama and Tennessee and do some camps down there. And then I would come back up to the start of our season in the Northeast, work all the way through, and then I would go past August and try to do as many camps into September as I could. Really just chasing summer in real life as long as I could after college. So then I met Brooke, and she was like, yeah, this is cute and all, but you can't really be gone for 3 straight months without seeing me.
Right.
It's not going to work if we're going to, you know, make this, you know, a permanent thing. So that kind of started the wheels turning. And I'd always had this dream of like starting my own camp or running my own business with cheerleading. And this is kind of the catalyst that turned it from a dream into like looking into the reality of it and what it would take. You know, I had no clue what the insurance was going to be. I had no clue like what the marketing was going to be. Like there were so many different kind of blind spots that I had, but it made me investigate them because I wanted to stay in the cheer world, but also not lose Brooke.
Right.
how do you keep your wife and your dream job? So yeah, that's kind of what's spurned the whole creation of SGS, you know, and it was also something we could do together. So
yeah.
Really, you know, once we got started and she saw how much fun it was and how good it was to kind of do together, she really jumped in and, you know, loves that part of the job and, you know, connecting with customers and helping it be a success.
Yeah. Yeah. Brooke's great.
Yeah, and at night, sometimes when we're just watching camp and everyone's on the field and we're just standing there together and we're looking around, she's like, we built this.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We just kind of have that aha moment of, yeah, it's pretty special to, you know, have 350 campers out here all having a great time in the summer with a great staff and good energy and good vibes on campus and know that we started it. So it's really cool.
Yeah, that is really cool for sure. So what's the vision of Solid Ground Stunts?
When we started, all I wanted to do was make enough money to not go bankrupt doing what I love and keep Brooke happy, but still be able to be in the cheerleading world and actively cheerleading as much as I could and stay part of, you know, stay connected to Varsity and UCA because they are a tremendous resource when we're talking about marketing, when we're talking about getting trained eligible staff that are ready to go, and it takes a lot of the overhead and the thinking away from starting a camp when you contract with a company like UCA, NCA, etc. So our mission was really to afford to provide an affordable experience to cheerleaders that was fun, but competitive, and push them to be their best so that they're ready for their seasons. And I guess that's always been our mission. We pride ourselves on transparency about, you know, if there's ever a price change, we're very open about why. It's very rarely about us taking a pay increase. We've been making about the same for the past 10 years. This would have been our 10th year without COVID, but the university didn't let summer programs in. So we are running a kind of a adapted schedule through an indoor soccer facility this summer.
Oh, interesting.
So it's very small. It's about a third of our normal size based on restrictions for the courts and everything like that. But we just wanted to do something to stay relevant and to stay, like, even if we break even, like, just to get the shoes back on and get out there and knock the rust off.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it.
So taking 2 summers off would just not, it was not an option.
Yeah. Well, your camp has a few differentiators too that I know, like, whenever I ask my cheerleaders, where should we go for camp this time? Like the dance parties, which I've not seen at any other camps that we've gone to, or I don't know, I'm trying to think, but there are a few things that you guys do that are different than other camps that make you stand out.
Yeah. Really what it comes down to is I wanted to make sure that there was, you're paying for a full 4-day camp experience. I want it to be a full 4 days. It's not 8 o'clock. All right, fend for yourself. Like, let's try to offer something fun in the evening, try to make better connections with the staff. And I always tell the staff that when they show up too, it's like, this isn't necessarily like any other camp that you go to, that you work across the country, because we do go the extra mile to make those connections and to be with the kids as much as possible during the waking hours of the day. Yeah. We work hard. We play hard. You know, we expect the staff to be there and be on all the time. Even if you're in your gym clothes walking down the hallway to get ice.
Yeah.
And you see a cheerleader, like, be on, be smiling, like, talk to them. Like, it's really about the full 4-day experience, not just, all right, camp's over. We're going to go to Applebee's, bye. And we speed off down the road and go have appetizers. We want to be with the kids. We want them to know that we want to be with them and helping them not just as cheerleaders during the day, but also, you know, socially adapt at night and have fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely stands out. And also, I know you guys do like a coach's reception. I think it's on the first night. And I always really like that just because you, as coaches, you don't really get that time to sort of mingle with each other, you know, and network that way. So I think that's a great thing that you guys do too.
And that's something that I borrowed from Andy Osanoff, who used to run the Mount Ida camps, and Jerry Prosciutto, who runs the Pine Forest camps out in Pennsylvania. It really drove home the idea that you got to take care of your customers and you have to take care of your coaches. That first day is arduous. Getting on the bus, getting everyone packed up, making sure the paperwork's there, you know, driving from wherever you are to where camp is, getting off the bus, making sure that no one forgot their pillow, no one forgot their meds, no one forgot, all the different things that go into that first day. It's a lot. And for that, so that first night, Brooke and I really wanted to make that special where, like, coaches, just sit down, your kids are in the dorm, they're fine. Let go of them. Turn off your phone. Sit down. You know, have some wine and cheese. Put your feet up and not think about any of that anymore. Yeah. You made it. You know, time to relax and enjoy the actual experience, not the stress of getting to camp, because it is a lot.
Yeah, it sure is. Yeah, I know. I really appreciated that too. So I remember actually the first time I took my cheerleaders, my high school team, to a camp, I was like really clueless about it because I cheered in high school at Quabbin. We never went to camp, but this was way back in the olden days of the 90s, right? So I'd never even gone like as an athlete. So what would you, if I had thought enough to come to you and say, hey, what do you recommend ahead of time? You know what I mean? Like, it didn't even occur to me. But what would you recommend a new coach or a new camp coach do to make sure that they're having a successful camp?
From the start, just be open with communication with the head instructor, with your instructors, and be like, I just want to make sure I'm going to the right place. Like, I have this schedule. There's a whole lot of stuff written on it. Like, am I going to the right place? Like, what does it mean to be early? What does it mean to be late? Like, how long does it take to get to these facilities? Like, just knowing that you're in the right place at the right time and the stress reduction of knowing that you're in the right place is huge. You know, I would also recommend getting like a camp buddy. Like, if you know there's a veteran coach in the opening coaches meeting, that's like,
that's a good idea.
Like, they're back taking a nap when everyone else is like taking notes. Like, they've obviously done this before. Like, you know, try to just like tell your team, like, all right, whatever that team does, follow them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that is a great idea, actually.
Yeah, because I'm thinking, like, I think one of our two longest tenured teams in terms of, like, they're always there, they're always, like, the first ones to sign up, are Wakona and Watertown, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And, like, their coach doesn't even tell the kids what to do when anymore. Like, they just, the seniors know, and, like, they're just marching around the place, and they know the schedule before they even get there. So, like, getting, kind of feeling out, like, who are the veteran teams and who knows what looks like they know what they're doing, and mm-hmm. kind of, like, try to get a buddy system going.
Yeah.
I've seen that work a lot. Even if it's a team on your floor, your next door neighbor, when you're moving in, like, make friends and, oh, have you been here before? Oh, you know, what's the deal with this opening demos, or what's the deal with Camp Champs, or things like that. Yeah. So getting a coach buddy works really well, and really just asking those questions and not being shy to talk to your head instructor, or your big brother, big sister, because they can really make it easy on you, because it is such a tight schedule when we start going.
Yeah.
Like, did I miss something? Am I supposed to be prepared for this cheer private coaching? Am I supposed to be prepared for this dance private coaching? So asking those questions kind of a day ahead or in that opening meeting can really clear things up. But trust the schedule. Trust that we're going to get your kids where they need to be. And that's what camp is all about. We are a finely tuned machine that gets your kids to a finished product. Whether you're a 10-year coach or a first-year coach, your kids are going to leave with a product and they're going to get better.
Yep, that's true, actually. Yeah, it's overwhelming your first time, I think, but you're right. It's a machine, you know? So if you just kind of are led around by it, you'll be okay at it, you know? But I know my first time, I didn't even realize Camp Champs was like a mini competition. I didn't even figure that out, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah. I mean, just the lingo, right? The vocabulary in the schedule. You're looking at, what the heck is Camp Champs? What the heck is All Stars? What the heck is this? What the heck is that? Yeah, there's a lot of... It has its very own particular vocabulary, for sure.
Yeah. That's
funny. Yeah. So asking questions, staying ahead of the schedule a little bit works. And just kind of ride it and have fun and roll with it. And like I said, we're going to make your team better no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. All right. So let's talk about the Big Banana, because I know my kids are so interested in the Big Banana, I think, over anything else at camp ever. So can you explain, like, what it is and what it team can do to win it, I guess?
So the Top Banana is a staff selected award, and it is typically awarded to a team that not just is the highest energy, but also is fully engaged in all their classes through the day. So a lot of teams will make the mistake of just thinking, if I'm the craziest team here and I just, like, have wild hair and scream from place to place and, like, do chants in the lunch hall, I'm gonna get the Top Banana. But it's really about, like, was your team attentive in class? Were you polite to the staff? Were you working hard all the way through a really tough cheer class in the sun, and you were sweaty, but you kept your energy up and you smiled and you yelled and you didn't get grumpy and you didn't, like, you know, you didn't let yourself down, right? Yeah. So what the staff is looking for is kind of that complete package of not just the most energy, but consistent, sustained, positive energy throughout the day, even when you're not necessarily expected to have high energy, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah, but that does make sense, yeah.
There are a lot of teams that will just be like, we're going to dress crazy and scream from class to class as loud as we can and, like, do this chant and just scream, we want the top, we're hungry, we want the Top Banana, and just do that all day long. Yeah. But that's not necessarily going to win you a Top Banana, because you might have been really grumpy in dance class, and we're a bunch of nudges.
Yeah.
And now, you want the Top Banana, but you didn't keep it up when you thought you weren't being watched.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. And things like offering to help put away the mats or clean up, stick around for that. That counts too. Like, good citizenship, I guess.
Yeah, good citizenship, but, you know, we don't expect you to be a slave.
Right.
Like, to earn a Top Banana, but just being positive throughout the day and doing the right things when you don't think people are watching.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
So I have a funny story. When they started the Top Banana, it was 2003. It was my second year on UCA staff. And about halfway through the summer, they ran out of bananas, like, in the warehouse. Like, they didn't order enough bananas, or there was a shortage with the factory of making these bananas from China or wherever the heck they were from. And so they gave us petty cash to go out to Walmart and get some kind of inflatable. because the banana wasn't really a thing yet, but we hyped up, like, we wanted to make this like top prize.
Yeah.
So I was at Franklin Pierce College. We were doing a camp for Megan Lawton and I, and we had this petty cash and we didn't have a top banana. So we called the office in Memphis and we're like, we didn't get a banana in our box. What do we do? And they're like, go to Walmart and find an inflatable and just make it a thing. Like, just create whatever hype around this inflatable that you want and just run with it. So we went to Walmart in Ringe and we got a inflatable frog, like this like green frog, and we called him Vincenzo, and we just ran into Franklin Pierce with 150 kids as loud as we could about this frog, and we made it like, gosh, we made it just as exciting as a top banana. And it just kind of highlighted that you can create a tradition out of anything.
Yeah.
With the energy and the right, you know, the right push for it, and you know, you create it. And then, you know, after that year, the banana was such a hit, it can't go away now. And now we have so much surplus of bananas, we'll never run out of bananas. Sometimes they have two to every camp.
Yeah, that is funny. But the kids, they do love it. They just like, yeah, I think we talk about it the minute we say we've picked our camp, and then they're like, oh, how do we get the banana? And I'm like, I didn't even know.
So it started out as just a gimmick of just like, you know, it always been spirit sticks for NCA and UC. It's always been a spirit stick. You know, if you earn your spirit stick every day, and then someone said, well, shouldn't we have a top award? And then that turned into a top banana.
Yeah.
And then they didn't have enough, so we had to run with it.
Yep. That's funny.
That was the origin story of the banana.
Oh, that's cool. It's a really great tradition, though.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, it has a life of its own, and everybody wants the top banana.
They really do. This is the stupid inflatable. And if you don't get it on the last day, you don't even get to keep it. But it's like means the world to those kids. So.
Yeah, so like the first 3 days, you have the honor of carrying it around for a day.
Exactly. You have to hold it.
But if you take it on the fourth day, you can take it home, put it in your trophy case.
Yeah.
That's a coveted thing, too.
Yeah. Someday we'll get it on the fourth day. Another big contest at camp is the Camp Champs, right? And I've been to some of the camps where I've seen coaches with their kids. They're all like on the field before breakfast. And on every break, they're working on their routine and stuff like that. And there are other teams like me, my first year, who were like, why are they practicing so much? You know, don't the kids need a break? So what do you think about that? Is there like a happy medium, or what would you advise coaches when it comes to the Camp Champs?
We've really tried to cut down on coaches practicing that hardcore in between sessions, because then you need to have downtime. It's a rigorous camp. There's a lot of stunting. There's a lot of private coaching going on in a camp schedule. So to really be pushing during the breaks, the wheels are going to fall off. Philosophically, I really feel that. I mean, if you want to do walkthroughs, if you want to do like your, you know, clean up your dance, things like that, that's normal. Less low wear and tear, you know, but good mental energy for your team and building your culture. And every coach has their own preferences on like how they clean and how they move. And, you know, those are things that, yeah, if you want to use your break to work on that with your new kids and get everyone up to speed on that, great. Yeah. But we've really tried to build into the schedule practice time offset of private coaching time, so that coaches could have structure time where they could work their kids as much or as little as they wanted to get that practice in, so they could be ready. And really, we pack so much private coaching in, we've rarely had, like, disasters on the Camp Champ mat. Like, teams are ready, teams go out, they hit. It's really a fun showcase at the end of that week that they are ready with that routine to perform it. Even teams with injuries, they're able to like still put something out there and feel good about their product.
Yeah.
So I don't think practicing during the breaks is necessary. It's coach's preference, but I see a lot of value in giving them downtime and just kind of letting them be free on a college campus for half an hour and take a nap if they need a nap, rest if they need a rest, hydrate if they need to hydrate, and then come back ready for the next rigorous class that we're going to run.
Yeah, recovery is so important too, for sure. Yeah. All right. So with all your years experience at camp, you must have some tips on how to beat the heat, because that can be just wow. You know, I think we had one year at your camp where it felt like it was 110 degrees on the field or something. Like, it was so hot.
It was cooking, and it was dusty, because like, 300 cheerleaders kill the grass real fast. So by day three, it's a dust bowl. Map out the schedule, and I would even kind of scout the field and see where the shade is. And you will see that some veteran UCA staffers will know right where the shade is going to be during the private coaching. They will stand over there when their team gets called. They run for that shade as fast as humanly possible. So yeah, if you could even, like, as you're walking out to private coaching, like, oh, I see that tree over there looks really nice. Send your assistant coach over there to stand.
Yeah.
Claim the spot, claim the shade, as long as it's not near any low branches or hazards.
Right.
But yeah, just kind of being proactive about, like, grabbing the shade.
Yeah.
Because it is coveted.
It sure is.
Yeah. And we try to break it up. We try to use the AC facilities as much as possible. Just, you can't fit everyone stunting in there all the time.
Yeah, I agree. But you're one of the few camps with AC facilities in my experience. So. Yep.
And cell phone service.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Modern amenities. Two of our pluses at Westfield.
Yeah.
Beautiful dorms. AC dining hall, beautiful field house for final day, and then obviously, yeah, just a fun, safe environment overall.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's nice that the field's kind of like inside all of the buildings, you know, so even if the kids are like, can I go to the bathroom or, you know, get a snack, then you can still even sort of see them. You know, they never really leave you, you know, to go somewhere.
Yeah, I feel so safe at Westfield just as a facility. Like, the field is all right there. You have the triangle of the buildings that we use. Everything's within sight. You know, we have plenty of trainers and water stations around that people have access to. And we've just had wonderful experiences there. And we were so sad when COVID shut it down.
Yeah.
But we'll be back.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. So we've talked a lot about solid ground stunts and, like, some of the good differentiators, some of the things that you guys do that makes it an amazing camp. But is there anything else that we missed? Like, it's the lip sync. Is that just a you thing? I've only ever done it there, you know?
Yeah. So out at, I mean, I'm a huge karaoke guy, so I love singing. And so I love lip syncs. You know, Jerry out at Pine Forest does a talent show. Like, that's his big thing. On his final night. And I just wanted to do something a little bit different, but still fun, and let teams that wanted to showcase some goofiness and some silliness do it. But not everyone has to participate. But, you know, it's a nice little crowd building thing. Some teams take it way too seriously. And, like, the seniors have the skit planned, like, from tryouts on. And others, like, whip it together the day before. And some come with costumes, some don't. Some send up solo acts. It's just a fun little thing to do. Every once in a while. So the most famous one at Solid Ground, two of our staff members got engaged during the
lip sync. That camp, yeah.
So that was a special moment for us, and I was actually able to officiate their wedding. A couple years later, I went down and officiated their wedding, and so it was kind of came full circle. They met at our camp, they got engaged at our camp, and then I was able to wed them. So
that's so sweet. Actually, what a great story.
It's great. Camille and Cody, they're a one-of-a-kind couple, special people.
Yeah, my kids loved Camille, but I believe they called her Beyonce.
Yes. Well, I'm sure she told them to call her Beyonce. I'm actually Beyonce. So she's...
Yeah. She was...
Her nails out, and yeah.
Big personality, yeah. Great, great person.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
Yeah. All right. So I also know that many times in the past, Solid Ground Stunts books up. I feel like it's like by February, the dates come out and you're booking up really fairly fast. So how would you, in a normal year, when would be the right time to reach out to you guys? You know, like, you do it like as we're leaving that, and, you know, if so, coach is like, yeah, I know I want to come back next year. You know, right. Do you sign up then or do you wait, or what's the best time?
So we don't get our dates from the university or from UCA until November. Usually around Veterans Day, we start posting the dates and everything for the upcoming summer. And, like, the UCA catalog goes out, and, like, all of that literature is on the internet and things like that. I'm pretty sure as soon as they release their catalog, you can start booking and registering through the Varsity website. Obviously, you can email us directly and then we'll call them and lock you in. But we don't know the dates until November.
Okay.
It doesn't quite make sense to book like at the end of camp, even though I wish we could do that. There's just a lot of moving parts in terms of, like, Westfield has other summer conferences that we have to fight with. We have to pick, like, the best dates to maximize weekend time. So we always try to, like, hit at least one weekend day per session. So, like, how that rolls out takes some negotiating with the college. And then we run those same dates by UCA to make sure they have staffing for it. So it's about a month process to get all that done, and then they roll it out with the with the brochure for the next summer. February is like their big like varsity push for signing up for summer camp. Like that's like their like they have their national sales meeting and they all go out like gung ho to like go and recruit and get people signed up. It's like a national signing day, I think they have. And it's funny because like January, I'm like, oh man, no one signed up yet. And then February, we're booked. I'm like, we don't have enough beds. Stop booking people. And they just want to keep like, they're just in a frenzy to book all these teams. And it's really hard to identify who booked first when it all happens within like a week. Because everyone's calling or logging on the website. It's almost like trying to get a vaccine spot. You know, there's 1,000 people going for 300 spots and who's going to get there first, you know? So it is a big push in February because of that national signing day. And usually we have wiggle room. So there's always like a 50 camper swing as we hit like deposits and tryouts and some teams are smaller than they thought they were going to be. Some teams are larger than they thought they were going to be. But usually it's within like, you're just within 50 of our max number for beds. And if it's lower 50, then we can add a couple teams. So we do keep a waiting list. If there's someone, especially if they like signed up for session two, but they want session one and they're like trying to wiggle their way to these dates. We can usually make that happen once we have the final like deposit numbers in June. But it's always smart to sign up for kind of your dream number. It's easier to reduce than to add on.
Yeah.
Right. So if your goal is to have 20 members on your squad, register for 20. You don't have to pay any money when you register.
Right.
You're just holding your, you're just reserving your spot for 20, you know, 20 campers, two coaches. You're locked in. I've already locked those beds up. And then, we only have 18 or we only have 15. You know, I can always cut down and then I can rearrange to, you know, maybe fit another team in or to allow a team to bring more. You know?
Yeah. So
I always recommend to reserve your goal number and then you can reduce it when it's time for deposits.
Yeah, that's great advice. I know we started doing that too, just to make sure, although we're usually a small team. But okay, so just one more thing. So thanks to COVID, we talked about there's no major Solid Ground Flints camp this year, but you said that there is something that you're doing?
Yep. So we are running two commuter sessions at Four Kicks, which is an indoor sports facility in Marlboro, Mass. The last weekend of July and the first weekend of August. It's 3 full days instead of 4 days. And there is a hotel across the parking lot for teams to stay in if they want to stay there instead of driving back and forth. So I know there's a few teams from Connecticut that are definitely staying in the hotel and are going to do the walk across the parking lot. And there's a restaurant in the hotel. They actually do team meals. They have like a team meal thing, so you can do team dinners, and we're providing lunch. So we're excited to do something.
Yeah.
Get the blood flowing and get as many kids on the court as we can. Unfortunately, we are capped at 150 kids. Okay. Or 150 people.
Yeah.
So coach
and staff.
Right. So it's a little tight. So we actually are full for both sessions right now. A lot of those teams are tentative based on, you know, if their AD lets them, if the school committee lets them, if there's a flare up, if the state regulations change because of COVID. So it is precarious, but we are hopeful that all the teams that signed up are ready, able, willing, and capable of coming on those dates and that we can have some kind of camp. Yeah. So, you know, if both run at full capacity, we'll still be at a third of our normal summer camp load.
Wow.
So we normally run 3 sessions of 3 to 350. Mm-hmm. And this year we'll be running 2 sessions with 300 total.
Wow. Wow. Gosh.
Yeah. So very different. Very different world.
Yeah. But at least it's happening. I mean, I only got the go ahead from my athletic director to start thinking about football cheer. You know, now you can think about it, he said.
Right. Think about planning about tryouts. Exactly.
So I was like, oh, I wonder if there's even camp, you know, like what's going to happen. So
it's, right. You know, and a lot of our longtime customers were, you know, were just heartbroken because they were like, we wish we could come, but our AD won't let us.
Yeah.
Or our state won't let us leave the state, things like that. So typically we serve all of New England and New York. Like we'll have teams from Vermont, Rhode Island, New Hampshire, Mass, and like the Albany area of New York regularly come. And Connecticut's a huge, there's always at least 40% of our campers are from Connecticut. Like Connecticut teams just love coming to our camp.
Yeah. The state's really well located for that too.
Yes. So it's right off 91. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, cool. Yeah. So COVID makes that muddies that water too, because every state has different travel restrictions and things like that. So,
yep.
You know, even if an AD was like, yeah, sure, have camp. Oh, we're going to Massachusetts. No, thanks.
Yeah.
Oh, you're crossing state lines.
Mm. New story. Yeah. Yeah, I know, it's crazy. All right, so changing directions just a little. You and Steve Wright were sort of the driving force behind bringing Game Day into Massachusetts, right? Which is, it's only been like a few years, I think. I remember the first time I saw you with a team at a competition at a league. And now, a few years later, it's huge, right? Like it has its own day at states, I think, because there are so many teams. So what are the benefits of being a Game Day team? Like, why did you want to bring it?
So Game Day really was born out of this idea that the shift had gone so far to all music, all star style, competitive performances versus cheerleading,
mm-hmm.
the roots of cheerleading, that we wanted to give an avenue for both. And I can't say enough about Steve really working hard with MSSAA and NFHS and all of the different principal associations and cheer associations around New England. He really made it happen. And, you know, he and the support staff from Memphis trying to make this a national thing, you know, they got the literature out. They really pitched it as, you know, a gap in, you know, the cheerleading world that wasn't happening, and the teams needed it. Cause there are teams that just weren't at the competitive level with, you know, these perennial top 10 state performers that felt like they were just stuck at leagues their entire life. They could never go beyond that because there wasn't an avenue for them. But they were phenomenal cheerleaders and they were great at games and they lived for games. And I remember that competition you were talking about where we kind of demonstrated Game Day, I believe it was Wakona, came out from Western Mass, and they are a phenomenal Game Day program. They've won Game Day state several times since it became a thing. They've gone to Game Day Nationals for UCA down at Disney World. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we knew that they have a powerhouse football team in Division III. Like, they always go to Gillette. Like, every year they're like, wow. They're going to the Super Bowl. So their whole culture is around that Game Day experience. Mm-hmm. And they just naturally lived it, right? So once we had this avenue of, you can compete what you do,
mm-hmm.
they filled that space. And I think that really pushed the state to see, wow, this, you know, I've never even heard of this little Western Mass town, but they are so entertaining and so much fun. And it's just a different way, a different type of cheerleading we didn't know really existed, especially like high school principals. Like they don't.
Yeah.
They're not spending time investigating the various cultures of cheerleading around the state, right? you know, every league has its own kind of identity and competitive spirit and edge.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was an initiative to open up a competitive option for traditional cheer versus, you know, the high intensity, maxing out your score sheet, you know, music driven routines that have kind of taken over the competitive side of cheer.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And for what it's worth, my daughter who cheered in college and ended up, that was the first time because they have to do a Game Day and their competitive routine. She was like, loved Game Day. She thought it was the most fun thing she'd ever done. And she'd been an all-star cheerleader all throughout her whole life and stuff. And she was like, we should do Game Day all the time. So it was kind of interesting.
Well, it's just a different vibe. And it was kind of like, we nationally felt that we were drifting away from our roots.
Yeah.
Cheerleaders like, hey, what about like yelling and like smiling and having fun and motion and synchronized stunts instead of just your max out skill stunt? Yeah. And so we were just trying to find a way to bring that back and make it relevant again across, you know, nationally. And some states, that's all that's, you know, they stayed with that.
Yeah.
So, like I look at like Pennsylvania states, they are a hardcore game style traditional cheer state. versus like New York and Massachusetts that shifted more towards that, you know, ultra competitive all-star style for high school.
Yeah.
So every state kind of has its own identity, but we felt like it was drifting away and we wanted to save the roots a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And give teams that aren't necessarily all team tumbling and all team scorpions and all, you know, that to mm-hmm. have a competitive advantage in a type of cheerleading that they felt comfortable with that they could showcase.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean you can't do hard skills in game day. It just means that you're not rewarded as much for them.
Right. Exactly. Which helps level the playing field quite a bit. Right.
It's about perfection of routine and crowd worthiness of the routine, not necessarily how difficult your skill is.
Right. Yeah. So. Which I think it's great.
Yep.
So at least in Massachusetts, I don't know about other states. If you're a varsity team, you cannot compete game day and varsity. So I know I was just advising, like, Murdoch has a new coach. I was just telling her, I think maybe you should go to game day, if, you know, like, even just as a way to get back into competing. But if you were to give some advice to a coach on how to decide between the two options, what would you advise?
If it's a young program, I would definitely go game day. I would focus on the fundamentals. I would focus on, you know, motions and, you know, synchronizing your team and making sure that they understand what a routine is before you start making it difficult. If you walk in and your team has these competitive skills and that competitive edge and aren't necessarily good at cheering at games, mm-hmm. When I was coaching at Leominster, phenomenal cheerleaders, phenomenal athletes, not the best at a game. It's like, sorry to say, like, they just weren't natural game. Yeah. You know, some of them were, but on the whole, they wanted to compete. They wanted to max out on the mat. They didn't care about, I mean, they cared about going to the games, but they didn't care necessarily about, like, looking good as a game day team at the games. Yeah. Like it was a social thing. It wasn't necessarily, like, they didn't consider themselves a game day team.
Yeah, I understand what you're
talking about. Because I wanted to be a game day team. Like, oh, we could crush game day, but you guys can't. So
yeah.
So we stayed in the competitive realm.
Mm-hmm.
And thrived there and loved it, but it always killed me a little bit on the inside that we weren't that good at game day.
Yeah. It's tough though. So maybe it is really evaluating the personality of your team too, right? Because I've had teams that are just like that Leominster team, but then I've also had teams where it feels like when you're prepping them for competition, you're like slave driving them, you know, like it's like you're fighting against them. So maybe if it was more fun and less pressure and less stress, you know?
Yeah. I think a lot of it comes down to that talent evaluation and, you know, looking around at your team and what's their identity, what's their character, what's like, what do they really want
mm-hmm.
out of their competition season? Like, do they mm-hmm. want to, you know, do they like their games? Do they like going to their football games?
Right.
You know, and you can tell a lot about your team. Like, are they like just itching for third quarter and then go to the concession stand and see their boyfriend? Or are they like thriving right. to do their halftime routine and like thriving to be on the sideline? Like,
yeah.
You can get a vibe from your team a lot, just kind of watching how they react to your season. But obviously you have to prepare for comps earlier in the season. So,
yeah,
you know,
it's a balancing act.
It is. And I wouldn't necessarily rule out being able to change.
Mm-hmm.
All right, this year we're going to go game day. Next year we're going to do comp. Like, we're going to, you know, kind of roll that in and see what works best for them and trial and error and see how it is, see how it goes, see what they like.
Yeah. And I think Attleboro is one school. I think that they go game day in the fall season and they compete varsity traditional in the winter season.
And I honestly, I would love it if that was just the model of the state.
Yeah.
Because football season is so hard to get your routine up to speed.
It is. Yeah. It's like 2 months. Right. Yeah.
It's intense. And if you make aspects of your game day competition routine, stuff that you're going to put into your competition, you know, your elite competition routine,
mm-hmm.
It kind of gives you more practice of those skills building up.
Yeah.
So I think that's a smart way to do it, but you have to know your team. You have to know that they can handle that. Yeah.
Right.
Cause I also wouldn't roll Leominster out for a game day competition in the fall.
Yeah. I know.
It's just not in their character, like in the character of the kids that I was coaching at the time. Like, they just didn't yeah. want it to be sunshine and rainbows and bubbly and, like,
right.
they wanted to stomp and like, I'm going to do my tuck in your face. And now we're gonna, like that was just their personality. So like, thinking about game day, it just didn't fit with their vibe. It didn't fit with the personnel. So it didn't really make sense for us to go that direction.
Yeah. And that
Yeah. I don't know if I gave you any actual advice or just gave you examples of.
Well, I think there's some advice in there, you know, your team, you know, and
know your team. Yep. Know what their strengths are. Kind of know what the field is, what you're going up against. You know, does it help your team to come in last in a competitive division?
Right.
Or are kids going to quit because why am I even doing this? Because we're going to be last. Like,
exactly. Like
that can factor in as well.
Yep. Makes sense.
Yeah. Like I did some choreography for a team down in Pennsylvania, and they were in a very, very competitive league. Mm-hmm. And they're always bottom two. You know, but they bring me into choreograph just so they don't make fools of themselves. They're like, we just want to look representative and like we're a put together team and go out there and perform. And like, it's almost like the culture of the team, the coach and the kids, they all know they're not going to win.
Right.
But they want to just look respectable out there. So they bring in a choreographer just so that they don't look like fools against all these really competitive teams that are all going to nationals. And so it part of it is just being honest about who you're going against as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right. So I think I've gone through everything I wanted to ask. Is there anything else you want to add?
No. Thanks for having me. Oh. And I love talking cheerleading. I could talk cheerleading all my entire life.
It's been a while.
And yeah, I really, you know, good luck with all of your endeavors, and hopefully all of our teams are back on the field very soon, and we can have our tryouts, and we can have our camps, and we can have our full seasons, hopefully soon without masks.
Yeah, hopefully.
We can move on with our lives, but yeah, go cheer.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to our podcast today. I hope you found it as informative and entertaining as I did. If you're enjoying the podcast, then please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. You can also follow us on Instagram at The Cheerleading Junkie, or find us on Facebook as The Cheerleading Junkie, or on Twitter at The Cheerleading One. That's T-H-E-C-H-E-E-R-L-E-A-D-I-N, number one. This is Jill Markley, The Cheerleading Junkie, saying see you next week.